Good afternoon. Are council ready? Please proceed.
Good afternoon, members of the court. My name is Kevin Connors, the law firm of Marshall, Dennehy, Warner, Coleman, and Goggin in Wilmington. I am counsel for the appellant Pacific Insurance Company. However, this honorable court previously granted admission pro hoc vice to my colleague, Mr. William G. Belain. Mr. Belain will be presenting oral argument on behalf of appellant Pacific Insurance Company. Mr. Belain is with the law firm of Landman, Corsi, Belain, and Ford from New York City. And with that, Your Honors, may I introduce to the court Mr. William Belain.
Thank you. Welcome to the court.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'm grateful for the opportunity to appear here. I appeared here 15 years ago. Enjoyed it then. I hope I'm going to enjoy it now. There are two issues before the court, as you're aware. The first one that I'll focus on will be the issue of whether Liberty Insurance had a duty to defend Conrail under their comprehensive general liability policies that were injured, that were issued to a contractor that I'll call Julian for purposes of convenience. Court below, as your honors know, found that there was no duty to defend. The key issue, obviously, is this additional insured blanket endorsement.
Does the record reflect the amount of money and controversy in this? Over this issue about the duty to defend?
It absolutely should, and I am embarrassed to admit that I can't tell you the amounts off the top of your head. You mean the amount of coverage that's involved? I assume that's where you're...
We're basically talking about the attorney's fees for Conrail.
Well, yes. I mean, no, we certainly do not know how much we'd be fighting over in terms of, okay, if you have a duty to defend, how much do you have to pay for all of the work that's been done up until now and any further work that may have to be done? No, that, I don't think the record has that information. And, of course, I think you also know, Your Honor, that this isn't on indemnity, so they'll still remain for adjudication down the road. The question of, okay, there was a duty to defend. Is there also a duty to indemnify? But if you don't get past step one, you don't get to step two.
Okay. Does that
help you?
Your client did pay out. Right.
We have been, we've most assuredly, because of issue two, we have been paying out for the defense.
Does the record reflect the total amount your client has paid?
It does not. I do not believe it does.
And if and you want to transfer all of that to Liberty, and if, right?
We'd like to transfer it, or if we only win on one of the two issues, we get to split the baby, if I may use that phrase.
But no one knows, at least from the current record, how much...
I am certain that is the case, and again, I'll only remind the court that there's also the step beyond it, which is indemnifying. We've got to get the proper interpretation of the provision, because there most assuredly will be an issue if there is a duty to defend over the question of, okay, now who has to handle indemnification.
All right, and what about this? The case, the underlying wrongful death actions were settled, right?
I believe they are both settled and resolved.
So do you know the amount that they were settled for?
If my local counsel can provide that answer, I do not recall. I'm embarrassed to admit. I'm sure it's not in the record here for the court.
Okay. And they were settled.
If it's something that matters to the court, we'd obviously be prepared to provide that.
All right. They were settled without a trial.
Yes.
Well, it's undisputed that Conrail was not listed on the policy as an additional insured.
Correct.
Then if it does or did occupy that status, it would be by virtue of some other provision in the policy. What is that provision, and what are the issues precisely?
It would be because of the additional insured blanket policy provision, which is at A-167. In other words, and what I'd like to do actually right off the bat, if I may, is distinguish that provision, which clearly doesn't call for an identification specifically of the additional insureds, with the provisions that are at appendix pages 168 through 171, where the way their policy reads, they do require a specific schedule, they being Liberty, do require a very specific schedule of those parties that essentially will
counsel,
be additional.
Counsel, we have a limited amount of time, and I want you to get to the issue. Identify the issue and get to it.
I'm sorry?
I want you to identify the issue.
The issue is, in the first instance, the additional insured blanket policy provides that an additional insured will be entitled to coverage if there's an agreement in writing to provide liability insurance with respect to liability arising out of your, that would be Julian's, operations. And the court below said the word arising out of only means that Conrail can claim insurance if it's being held liable on a principle of agency or respondeat superior. And that's the only basis. In other words, if it turns out that they're being held potentially liable because of their own negligence, then this provision in the additional insured blanket endorsement doesn't apply because arising out of can't be construed that broadly. And we have cited to the court the Eon Labs case from 2000 decided by this court, which we believe establishes the definitional principle of what arising out of means. And what it means is just some meaningful linkage, some tie between, in this case, what the contractor, Julian, was doing at the site, and the fact that there is a claim for liability against Conrail. And we then say, let's go to the pleadings. We're supposed to look at these broadly in favor of insurance for the insured. And when we look at the pleadings, we will find at pages A111 through 114 a series of allegations which read together quite clearly indicate that part of the theory of liability is Julian's doing construction work. Julian's construction work created dangerous conditions. Those dangerous conditions should have been known to Conrail, separate and apart from what Conrail did. Those dangerous conditions should have been known to Conrail, and Conrail should have remedied those conditions. And most specifically, I've cited you to the appendix reference sites, but the very specific paragraph in one of the pleadings that I think ties that down is paragraph 18 at page A114. And that's where you're going to see that one of the allegations was, Conrail, you're on the hook. You should have known that it was a dangerous condition. You should have fixed it. And we say, as a matter of law, that the arising out of requirement is satisfied. There is clearly a linkage between what Julian does and the fact that Conrail is in this lawsuit with claims being asserted against it. And so long as that is at least one of the clear theories, one of the claims that's inherent in the complaints against Conrail, then there must be a defense of the whole thing. And I think this court said that in a case decided more than 30 years ago. If you're in for a penny, you're in for a pound.
Now, the policy refers to arising out of operations or land use.
Operations.
But your focus is on the operations.
Yes.
So there were specific allegations here that the operations of Julian were tied to the negligence of Conrail.
The operations is their construction work, which are specifically covered in the pleading, in paragraphs 9, 10, 11. You'll see it. Julian's there. Julian's operations is a construction work at and about the crossing. Next allegation is a dangerous condition was created. There's also an allegation that Conrail created it, but there's a separate allegation that says a dangerous condition was created. And then from that, you get to the last piece, which is Conrail stuck because it didn't fix the problem that was created by Julian. And that would be our meaningful linkage.
I'm sorry, you cited paragraphs 9 through 11.
But those
paragraphs relate to Julian. Which paragraph?
Yes, in other words, you've got to read them, and then you go paragraph 18.
Excuse me, let me finish my question.
I apologize, sir.
Which paragraphs relate to Conrail?
Right. I'll find it for you precisely. It starts with Julian, and you need that because it's the building block to get to the other. The paragraphs that relate most directly to Conrail start at 15, that's at A113, through 18, that's on A114. And actually, you can also look at 19 and 20 as well on A114. Because that's where they talk about not only what Conrail created, but what was created. Yes, sir.
The problem is that the complaint does not say in so many words that that Conrail knew or should have known of the dangerous condition created by Julian's operations. You're basically arguing that we should infer that claim from the text of the complaint, and that the lower court erred in not doing the same thing.
Well, they didn't even conduct this analysis. They didn't look at the Eon Lab case. I mean, the lower court just was refusing to accept the proposition that there could be coverage for negligence. Let me just cite the court, if I may, to your Continental Casualty Company case. It says, cited in our opening brief at page 18, any doubt about whether the complaint contains allegations that covers the insured's risk should be resolved for the insured. So Your Honor is right. The words aren't there, but it is easily inferable, in fact, should be inferred, that that is part of their claim.
Could I stop you there?
Please.
What exactly are we supposed to infer from all the paragraphs that deal with Conrail's negligence?
Conrail also is being separately charged with negligence directly. No question.
No, I'm saying what is it that we're supposed to infer with respect to Julian?
I'm not sure I understand Your Honor's question. The only thing I'm looking for the court to do is to conclude that there is a connection between Julian's operations having created a condition which Conrail was negligent for failing to remedy.
Well, actually, it's meaningful linkage or connection.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm very comfortable at least saying that I believe it's absolutely meaningful.
All right, but trial court, as I understand the opinion, said,
yes,
look, this complaint accuses or charges Julian with specific acts of negligence, and it charges Conrail with specific acts of negligence, and they don't intersect, they're not intertwined, they're separate. And that was the analysis of the lower court, as I understand it, and therefore, even if there was a meaningful linkage test to be applied, it fails here. Your response, I gather, is not so, that the meaningful linkage, you know, that is that, you know, the dangerous condition that was created by the operations of Julian were known to or should have been known to Conrail.
Absolutely.
All right. Again, the complaint doesn't say that, so how do you weave these various paragraphs together to make that argument?
Because any doubt about the complaint's allegations must be resolved in favor of the insured under the Continental Casualty decision that we cited at page 18.
Well, that's fine. If you have an argument that can be made, then perhaps that's the case. But the other side, I believe, is arguing that there's nothing to doubt. That is, it's clear on the face of the complaints that what's being alleged here is separate and non-intersecting acts of negligence.
Well, I don't know what else to say. When I read this that says should know or should have known that a dangerous condition had been created, and we also know that they earlier alleged that Julian created a dangerous condition, right? That's also alleged earlier on in the pleading. Mm-hmm. Then I don't see why it isn't perfectly rational inference to say, okay, they're being charged with creating dangerous condition themselves. They're being charged with also not appreciating the fact that a dangerous condition had been created either by themselves or by Julian, as a result of which they should have remedied the situation.
So if I understand you, what you're saying is that in paragraph 13, where it alleges that Julian created various dangerous situations in failing to have flags and warning signs and whatever,
right.
Then you move on, or the complaint moves on in paragraph 15 and says that Conrail had different dangerous conditions But since they were both at the same location, they're connected. Is that the idea?
Yeah, and actually, I think there's even arguably an overlap in the claims.
Okay, that, well, between, what, I, between what, the I, two. What I would like is for you to show me where that overlap is.
There is. I do think that the two can be read to overlap. I was looking for something that I actually thought was literally word for word the same. But it boils down in part to the fact that they have, for example, failed to warn, that's H, right? It'll be paragraph 13H. Mm-hmm. Failed to warn of the dangerous condition of its work site and the railroad highway grade crossing. That's the charge against Julian. Mm-hmm. And then when you look at Conrail, they say, C, this is paragraph 22, failed to post adequate warning signs at the railroad highway grade crossing. That would be an example. I actually did think that there was almost word for word in one of them, and I don't see it here now, so shame on me.
For your information, you're into your rebuttal time, which you're welcome to use.
Unless the court has some other very specific questions on the other issues, I'd rather save my rebuttal time, if I may. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Susan Listowski, and as you're aware, I represent the defendant, Appellee Liberty Mutual, in this matter. I think one of the facts that Pacific fails to recognize or fails to assert in any of its brief was recognized by the court below, and that is that there's two actual contracts in play here and two entities performing work in play here.
But Liberty, at the same location.
At the exact same location. There's two separate contracts. DelDOT specifically contracted with Julian to do such things as improving the crossing surface, relocating some warning lights, installing the arms that go across the crossing, installing new rails, installing new circuitry. And that was all that they contracted with Conrail to perform. Julian was charged with performing some of the operations regarding the roadway itself, rebuilding the road, widening the road, resurfacing the road. So, in fact, there's actually two entities performing work at this crossing at the same time. And I think that's the only overlap that we have in this instance. I don't think that's enough to establish a meaningful link between what is considered Julian's operations and what is considered Conrail's operations in this matter.
Well, isn't this, bottom line, a collaborative team effort to get the road improved across this crossing, and that everything is so blended together as a result of that that you can't really pull them apart?
I don't think it is a collaborative effort. I think the contract specifically specifies what contract provisions are required of Conrail and what contract provisions are required of Julian. And because that there are specific operations that each are performed, just because one was negligence or just because one, for instance, Julian's operations are called under play under Liberty's policy, I don't think that means that Conrail's operations are called into play under Liberty's policy.
But isn't, that sounds like a very assiduous effort to, separate out the operations of these two companies. But does it accurately describe what the complaint is alleging? I mean, can't you infer from the complaints that, the accident took place at this railroad crossing. This is Conrail's railroad. Conrail had an obligation to maintain the safety of the crossing. Although Julian, according to the complaint, created a dangerous condition because of its operations, and Conrail also created a dangerous condition arising out of its operations. Both of them, or at the very least, Conrail knew and was aware of the dangerous condition created by both and had, according to the complaint, a duty to fix it.
I have no disagreement that that might be, in fact, the case, but I don't think that gives rise to coverage under the policy for Liberty Mutual.
Before we get to coverage under the policy, isn't that at least a rational inference from the complaint?
There's a rational inference from the complaint that there are separate allegations, and I don't think anybody's going to dispute that there are separate allegations regarding Conrail's actions, and there are separate allegations regarding Julian's actions. The only thing that's tying everything together is the fact that, A, the plaintiffs didn't know who was performing what work, which obviously nobody would know. They didn't know.
I don't think you answered my question. Let me ask it again.
Sure.
Isn't it the case that from these complaints one can infer that the plaintiffs are claiming that even though Conrail and Julian created separate dangerous conditions at the crossing arising out of their operations, that Conrail was aware of both dangerous conditions and had a duty, which it did not perform, to fix those conditions?
I agree. Conrail did have a duty.
If that is the case, that is, if that's correct, then doesn't that satisfy the arising out of clause of the additional insured provision?
I don't see how that's arising out of Julian's operations necessarily. It's not arising out of Conrail's operations. The additional insured language says any person who have agreed in writing to provide liability insurance to, but only in respect to liability arising out of your, that is, Julian's operations. So something that Conrail does independent of Julian's operations shouldn't give rise to coverage under the insurance policy.
So what about something that, I'm sorry, Conrail does not do?
It's the same thing. The policy specifically isn't only regarding, obviously, something, an act. It could also be an omission. And I can get to that a little bit more when I talk about Pacific's policy. And Pacific, obviously, their policy is much broader than Liberty's policy in regards to that. And it specifically says anything that any act, error, omission, or failure to render advice of a professional nature on Conrail is specific force work, and is not necessarily the same as under Liberty Mutual's policy. I think the problem here is that Pacific is pushing for such a broad interpretation of any meaningful link that their interpretation boils down to the fact that there were two entities during performance of work at the same time overlapping during the same railroad construction job. And I just think that is too broad of a meaningful link under the circumstances, especially in light of the intent of the parties and in the intent of all the parties in this matter. And nobody has ever disputed this. Nobody wanted Liberty Mutual's policy to provide coverage to Conrail in this matter.
Well, even let me go back to make sure I understand your position. If Julian, as is alleged in the complaint, created a dangerous condition in the course of its operations, that dangerous condition at the crossing would arise out of Julian's operations. Isn't that correct?
I agree.
Okay. But you're saying that the fact that Conrail was also performing operations there and knew of the dangerous condition arising out of Julian's operation doesn't constitute activity by Conrail that arises out of Julian's operations, even though the dangerous condition arose out of Julian's operations.
But that's not what the complaint says. The allegations of the complaint, beginning on page 829, beginning on paragraph, it actually begins on 827, beginning on page 13, specifically says that Conrail created a confusing, dangerous condition. It also mentions that they knew or should have known that it had created a dangerous condition or that a dangerous condition had been created. You're asking us to infer from the complaint and the allegations in the complaint that that dangerous condition was created by Julian as opposed to something else.
I'm asking you to assume that one could read the complaint that way. If you assume that.
If you assume, then there is an allegation in the complaint that Julian, that Conrail should have known, and that there's an allegation in the complaint that because Conrail should have known that Julian created a condition, then there's an allegation in the complaint that it arises out of Julian's operations. But that's not the allegation.
Okay, so it's you're saying that if we were to accept the Pacific's interpretation of the policy, the Liberty policy, then that is, I'm sorry, Julian's, let me say it again. If we were to accept Conrail's interpretation of the complaint, then there would be an arising out of Julian's operation situation here.
There would be, but then I think you get to the issue of the insured contract, which we argued in.
Okay.
And the insured contract issue is that once that happens, then Julian is assuming the tort liability of Conrail.
I thought what you were arguing was even if we accept Conrail's and now Pacific's interpretation of the Liberty Agreement, doesn't matter. That is, even if we were to accept the interpretation of the complaint, that it wouldn't matter, there still wouldn't be an arising out of. But that's not your position.
No, that's not my position. No. I think you have two issues that you have to look at. First of all is whether or not they are an additional insured, and I made the argument in the brief regarding as to whether or not we can construe that this requirement that they purchase general liability insurance is actually that this requirement that they are to produce railroad protective public liability insurance is actually a requirement to purchase liability insurance when it's something that's statutorily mandated and would have been required even absence of the contract. There's also the whole issue, as I said earlier, regarding the intent of the parties. Conrail had put this in their contract, this requirement to purchase this specific railroad protective public liability policy, because they didn't want to be covered under Julian's general liability policy. And in fact, if you look at the whole history of the public liability railroad insurance policies, the way they came about was to get around the railroad exclusions that are in the general liability policies. The court and the Congress mandated that we have these, and the feds mandated that we have these type of insurance policies to get around those exclusions for the railroad exclusions in the general liability policies. The exact exclusion that is in Liberty Mutual's policy, that is, Liberty Mutual never intended that this policy apply to contract work, construction, demolition work being performed within 50 feet of a railroad crossing. Julian never intended it to be implied. Julian knew of their contract obligations under the contract. Julian went to Liberty Mutual, got information regarding premiums for the railroad protective liability insurance, but never followed through with it. Therefore, Julian never intended that this general liability policy apply to the case at hand. Pacific never intended it to. The only reason Pacific is here arguing this case is because they've been found at this point responsible under their policy, and now they are stepping in the shoes of Conrail and trying to find other coverage out there. The sole allegation that Julian was performing the work at the time, I just don't think it gives a meaningful link for Conrail's negligence in the matter. And there's also the public policy against indemnifying others' liabilities. And as this court has noted previously, while the purchase of insurance in and of itself is not going to render that public policy void, that is, if there is there's insurance out there for another's negligence, you're going to uphold the importance of that insurance provision. You've got to look at the intent of the parties once again, and you've got to look whether or not Liberty Mutual, the insurer in this matter, had noticed that they were going to be insuring Conrail under these allegations, and that just wasn't the case here. Regarding Pacific's policy, I just want to take a couple of minutes briefly to talk about their policy. I think it's really interesting that Pacific contends that the Liberty Mutual policy was construed too narrowly by the court below, but once their their insurance policy to be construed a little less narrow than the court below construed it. There's clear allegations in the fact that the complaint implicated forced work. And I just want to turn your attention to those allegations. And this is on page A29 of the appendix. There's clear allegations that Conrail itself created, and I don't think there's any stronger word other than created that could be used in this matter, created a defective condition. And how did they create a defective condition? They employed defective flashing lights at the highway crossing. They improperly placed these lights. In fact, these lights were one of the things under the original contract with DelDOT that Conrail was supposed to be performing. They failed to post adequate warning devices. There's all these things that they failed to do, these omissions, or these things that they did improperly. Most importantly, it notes on paragraph 20, subparagraph G, that they failed to utilize a flagman at the railroad crossing. Nobody's ever disputed the fact that a flagman is, in fact, a force employee. He's a force work personnel. There's separate allegations clearly in this case regarding the liability of Conrail and all the allegations and the complaints that they weren't done properly or should have been done. That all implicates force work under Pacific's policy.
Where in the record is there support for your last contention? That is that the replacement, the failure to replace the flashing lights and to utilize a flagman was force work.
Force work is defined under the policy of any work.
What are you reading now?
I'm at page A243 over to 244. It's work or operations performed by employees of the named insured, that is Conrail, for federal, state, municipal, or other political subdivisions or companies, corporations, and therefore or private concerns where the named insured is reimbursed for the cost of such works or operations. It also knows that force work includes liability of Conrail arising out of any act, error, omission, or mistake committed in the rendering or failing to render any device. Interestingly, force account work is so broadly construed, it's not when work actually commences. It's when the named insured or an employee of the named insured arrives at the force account work job location, whether to perform the work or to perform a pre-work inspection. If you look at the contract, and this is on page A219, this is part of the contract that was submitted between Conrail and Julian. On the changes in railroad facilities, it notes on A219 that temporary permanent changes of signal, communication, power transmission lines, trailers, and other railroad facilities required in connection with this project to clear temporary and permanent work of the contractor, that is Julian, will be made or caused to be made by Conrail without expense to the contractor. That is, the contractor is not being charged this work because Conrail is in their original contract with DelDOT. So there's clearly forced work being performed on this whole, not only on the crossing, but in the area around the crossing.
Can you, going back to the exclusion for a moment, can you help me with that? Because your opponent says that's irrelevant because it was tailored to a claim based upon something agreed to. Is that correct?
The insured contract exclusion, is that what you're
right.
talking? Okay.
I mean, the exclusion that you're relying upon, actually, if we focus on that according to you, we don't even get to this issue of whether there's a meaningful linkage. Is that right?
No, I don't actually think that right, because it is an exclusion under the policy. In order to get to the exclusion, you're going to have to find that Conrail was an additional insured under the policy.
Okay.
So I think you have to first determine whether they're additional insured under the policy. But if they are an additional insured, there's clear that there's an exclusion for any insured contracts Let's put it this way. There's an exclusion under the insured contract endorsement, for lack of a better word, because the policy permits insured contracts. But there's an exclusion under insured contracts that there's no coverage for construction work within 15 feet of a railroad. That is, if Julian contractually obligated to indemnify or to somehow assume any tort liability on behalf of Conrail, then there is an exclusion for any work that's being performed within 50 feet of a railroad. And I would state to you that because the contract between Conrail and Julian requires the contractor to purchase this railroad protective liability insurance in Conrail's name, which is to cover not only Julian's negligence, but Conrail's negligence, that is, in fact, an insured contract. And it's obvious, and there's no dispute, that this work was being performed within 50 feet of the railroad, and therefore the exclusion would bar any coverage in this matter. Briefly, in closing, I just would like the court to consider a couple of things. Who should bear the responsibility here? Is it Conrail, who should have never let this work be performed as before they had proof as required from their contract that there was valid railroad protective insurance here? Because we wouldn't be here if there was railroad protective insurance here. Is it Pacific, whose Conrail is actually their named insured, who had notice of potential claims by Conrail? Or is it Liberty Mutual, who insured a general contractor in the state of Delaware performing these type of road work, who now is being asked to insure Conrail for exclusions which they had in a policy, which clearly shows that they didn't intend ever to issue any insurance having anything to do with any railroad work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Briefly, to get back to the trying to find parallel allegations, I think I can do a little bit better between if you can compare paragraph 13J on A113, which charges the dangerous condition against Julian of being failure to inspect its work. And if you look earlier, you can see that its work is at and about the crossing. You compare that with paragraph 22G, which is directed against Conrail, and that's at F, 22F on 115, and that charges Conrail with creating a dangerous condition by failing to properly inspect the area of the crossing. Even more direct, if you compare paragraph 13E against Julian on A112, failure to employ a flagman, compare that with paragraph 22G against Conrail, fail to utilize a flagman. That's on A115. Those are the two, I must admit, that I think almost used literally the same language.
Just to be clear on that, though, the fact that there are two allegations or several allegations of negligence against one entity and similar allegations of negligence against the second entity, how is it that that creates a link between the two if party one should have had a flagger and didn't, and party two also should have had a flagger and didn't? They happen to be working at the same location, but if they each independently failed to take proper precautions, how does that link them together?
And the answer is because proof at trial could ultimately prove that Conrail had no obligation to have a flagman there, that Julian did have an obligation to have a flagman there, but because of their failure to have a flagman there, Conrail was on notice of a dangerous condition, ergo, Conrail is also liable. And that would be my meaningful linkage.
What is your response to the forced work argument?
All you have to do is look at what she cites. There's nothing about the flagman there. I think if you look at A83, we discuss at that appendix site the kind of work that was involved with the force account work. There's no reference to a flagman. Also, I think, interestingly, I think if you look at 219, she cites a paragraph She cited the paragraph there talking about changes in railroad facilities. She didn't then look at the very next paragraph, at the very bottom, protection of railroad traffic, which talks about the contractor's responsibility relating to the protection of railroad traffic. This record certainly gives no indication whether a flagman is going to be somebody who, if put up there by Conrail, is doing it as part of force-out account work, that is, that we're going to be able to submit the bill to DelDOT, and DelDOT's going to say, no problem, we'll pay that bill, as opposed to, what are you talking about? That's your responsibility. That's part of your routine duties.
Can you address your opponent's argument about the exclusion, which you say is irrelevant?
Yeah.
It appears, according to her argument, to be right on point.
It's got nothing to do with this. That whole exclusion applies in the circumstance where the claim of liability against the insured is based on a liability assumed in contract. That is, somebody goes to Conrail and says, I've got a cross-claim against you because you agreed to indemnify, shall we say, Julian, just abstract, all right? That, their policy, their liberty policy, would typically cover that claim. It's their the liability, potential liability of Conrail would be one that was assumed in contract. Then you get into the exclusions and you find out, oh, wait a minute, we don't do it if the operations are within 50 feet. But the point is, the claims we're putting to Liberty have nothing to do with the liability assumed in contract. We're saying we've been sued in tort. We're being held liable in tort. We think it arises out of the operations of Julian. You don't even get into that exclusion. It's got nothing to do with the case.
Thank you. Your time
Thank
is
you,
up.
Thank you, Your Honor. Appreciate it.
We'll take the matter under advisement and take a brief recess.